This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Malik Williams coming up bottom of the hour here, 8:30. The Louisville power forward will be with us, fresh off a double-double Sunday night in Atlanta. Cards have Pittsburgh tomorrow night on ESPNU at 7 o'clock. And Malik Osborne, in case you missed it, Florida State senior leader, joined us yesterday. You'll hear from him also in this 8 o'clock hour as well. We start the hour, however, Pack, with I think one of the really bright guys covering college football in a lot of ways, Bill Connelly, who joins us this morning. He's got an article up on ESPN Plus, why college football could be primed for an unexpected powerhouse to emerge. Good morning, Mr. Connelly. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Thanks for the time. We just ran Andrea's piece with Miami from 20-odd years ago. Here's Mario Cristobal coming in. A lot of enthusiasm. They've sold 2,000 new season tickets. All sorts of things that have the arrow pointing up for Miami. In your world, is Miami closer to its return maybe than it's been in a few years?
Well, I mean, we know how important recruiting is. Just plain old recruiting, compile the talented at all costs. And Cristobal is one of the best in the country at that. So, I mean, that alone suggests that they've taken a nice step forward in terms of potential. But, you know, now they have to actually act on it. Oregon, you know, didn't really live up to its recruiting rankings after, you know, once it left Columbus this year. So I think Cristobal still has a lot to prove in that regard, but he's going to get talent there. And we know that when Miami was at its best, you know, the old seal the borders state of Miami, all that, you know, he's going to come as close as anybody possibly could to replicating that.
Bill, two things. Number one, I appreciate you joining me on Off Campus on SiriusXM Channel 84.
Yeah.
We've done radio interviews before, but this is your first time with us on television. So I'm glad to finally put a face with the voice. That's number one. We've always enjoyed your work on ESPN. You know, when you talk about recruiting, and we're now going through this name, image, and likeness world. And I know the rich keep getting richer from a recruiting perspective, but it is going to be intriguing to see the next couple of years how name, image, and likeness and schools that kind of get a head start by putting that program together. And again, it's all above board now. I mean, in the old days, oh, so-and-so got paid to go to school. Hey, you always heard those whispers, but now, hey, you can go ahead and put together an incredible organization of big-time boosters, companies that have ties to the institution, and do this above board. It will be intriguing to see. Not only do you have the old school teams that you traditionally get a bunch of great players, but teams that do a great job figuring out name, image, and likeness. And I think you're going to see that kind of spike here the first two or three years. Don't you agree? Because, I mean, I think we're on a totally different world now than we were 3-4 years ago. Completely different.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the most interesting thing right now, I mean, obviously, Rich could get richer. Alabama, Georgia will just get all the guys they want and all the transfers they want and all that. Maybe that's how this continues. But between name, image, and likeness and the transfer portal, the open transfers, and the 12-team playoff, the potential of a 12-team playoff on the horizon with more playoff appearances and just kind of more carrots on sticks for coaches who are coming up with good ways to recruit these guys, this feels like an opportunity for a usurper, so to speak. That was kind of the piece I wrote yesterday at ESPN.com. Miami and Florida State in the 80s, you know, this has always been a ruling class kind of sport. They came out of nowhere and dominated the sport for 15, 20 years. You know, there's an opportunity for that, whether it's a super long shot like a Jackson State or a Houston, whether it's just more like a Texas A&M or a Miami or somebody like that. I do feel like this is an opportunity for somebody to kind of assert themselves at a very, very high level. And I'm curious who that is.
Bill, is there a landscape that's similar to what we saw 40 years ago in the 80s? I mean, is there something about the early 2020s that reminds you of the early 80s, I guess?
Well, I guess the best parallel I can draw is the 2020s and the late 2010s were really close to the 1970s. And just in terms of, you know, we had a consolidation of power, whatever it was that I saw, like 9 teams had like 65 of 100 top 10 finishes in the 70s. It was a very, very oligarchy-friendly decade, and that's pretty much what we saw at the end of the 2010s, too. So all it takes is a few coaches retiring, a few coaching changes that don't go quite as well. The ruling class kind of steps back a little bit. That kind of opens up the door at least a little bit. But right now, this is a lot more like the 70s than the 80s. We'll have to see if that changes in the coming years.
Bill, yesterday, Caleb Williams, who's an outstanding quarterback for Oklahoma, basically entered the transfer portal. And to me, it was like the ultimate sign of this is a whole different world that we're in with college football. Yeah. And I don't, he could go back to Oklahoma. He may go basically, quote unquote, to the highest bidder for all we know. But it just seems like that announcement to me yesterday, I had shivers down my spine going, man, we are truly in free agency in college football. And I know it's turned a lot of people off that are used to the old school, the way that's been done, but you've got to embrace where we are. But it's kind of to the point now where I'm fascinated to see where he ends up, whether that be an ACC school, whether it be back to Oklahoma, whether he ends up. I mean, you tell me. In this day and age, you literally can write a giant check and get yourself an automatically terrific quarterback overnight. It's a crazy world.
It'll be interesting to see who navigates it well. I mean, obviously, you know, you bring in guys from other programs, guys you haven't developed yourself for 2 or 3 years. You know, there's at least risk there that, you know, it kind of messes with the culture or whatever. Maybe there's not. Maybe Caleb Williams is just automatic no matter what. But I think if we're reading the tea leaves, the fact that Dylan Gabriel changed his commitment to Oklahoma when Caleb Williams entered the portal, right. I guess we can kind of guess how this plays out as far as OU is concerned. But I mean, it's different, and the coaches that adapt to it will be fine. It's still going to look like college football. I think that's the thing that, you know, for all the change that we talk about, we're still going to get really excited when Team A plays Team B, you know, whatever that is, whether they're rivals, national powers, whatever. But there's going to be a lot more turnover on the rosters, and it changes what recruiting means. It changes what coaching means, I guess, in a lot of ways. So it's going to be really, really interesting.
All right, Bill, without looking at schedules. Oh, go ahead, Pac.
I just want to follow up with that, Bill, and call me crazy, because I may be dead wrong on this. I think it's going to fast forward the clock on schools that are truly committed to college football and ones that are not. Mm. And I don't care if you're in a Power 5 league or not. You're going to find out who is in the football business and who is not. And I think this whole name, image, and likeness and this free agency and the transfer portal, schools that do a great job coming up with their name, image, and likeness group to help from the recruiting process, I think we're going to see a separation even amongst the haves, if you will, versus what we've talked about with the, you know, Power 5 versus Group of 5. I think we're now going to take the Power 5 and we're going to see a division amongst the Power 5 of who's committed to football and who isn't. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I guess we've already seen it to some degree. Let's put it that way. I mean, we've already seen, you know, a situation where Clemson won a string of ACC titles in a row. Ohio State dominated the Big Ten more than normal. Oklahoma won a bunch of Big 12s in a row. I think we've seen a little bit of that in that regard. I mean, it's partially who's serious and it's partially who just adapts well, who can understand the new landscape and take advantage of it at the most. And that can overlap a lot, but it does offer opportunities for teams that, you know, just kind of adapt the quickest to the situation. You know, that again, that, if that's Alabama and Georgia and whoever, then that's, you know, it does create a separation in that regard. But I do think it at least offers an opportunity for a little bit of a shakeup, even if it's not much of one.
All right. I know you put a lot of data into all this stuff during the course of the year. And here's the question. Let's take all the ancillary stuff out of play. NIL, recruiting, coaching, things like that. In the stuff you put together at the end of this season, who's a team we should talk about in 22 that has compelling data from 21 that you think, okay, if you're going to watch somebody just on the off chance here, you might want to pay attention to X or Y?
Well, I think there are a couple. I mean, in the SEC, you know, we can talk about Texas A&M. I think they were much, much better on paper than they were than their record suggested. Let's put it that way, and not just because they beat Alabama. So mm-hmm. if they had a top ranked recruiting class, that's super intriguing. Within the ACC, really, Pitt was really good. This wasn't just a team winning a down ACC. They were really, really solid on paper. They proved that they were solid enough to almost survive without their top two quarterbacks in a major bowl game too. So
exactly.
I'm very curious about Pitt, and I'm very curious about NC State. Their defense was absolutely legit this year, and it seems like they've got some decent building blocks. So there are some, I mean, obviously, if we're talking about national title, then maybe we just talk about Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and see if anybody else belongs to the party. But this is still college football. There's still just a ton of intriguing stories to tell at all times. And I think within the ACC, I'm very curious about those two.
Well, plus we just saw this past year, a team that was unranked in the preseason make it to the college football playoff in Michigan for the first time ever in a group of five team. Finally knocked down the doors, even though Cincinnati's about ready to jump in the Big 12 waters. So, you know, college football is intriguing. I do think the expansion of the playoff will allow more folks to believe that they're a part of something, unlike the three or four or five teams we always talk about year in, year out. And to me, that's a good thing, even though I swear one of these years we're going to get two national semifinals that are actually interesting, that you can stay toward the third or fourth quarter and not have to go walk the dogs. I just hope that we can eventually get to that point, Bill, before we worry about whether the thing goes to 8 or 12 or whatever the number happens to be in the college football playoff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we saw, I mean, obviously the semifinals still weren't great, but we got to talk about Michigan and Cincinnati and the stories that they had, Cincinnati's rise, Michigan's redemption. And this was still in the four-team era. We still got to talk about new things in the lead up to the game, and they still made the playoff. They're still going to look back on this as a great season. So you have 12 of those. Obviously, if you have 12 spots instead of four, it's going to be diluted a little bit. But we still there were stories for like Ole Miss and teams like that, or even, you know, like Pitt making the college football playoff. That would have been a lot of fun to talk about. And I think that matters, even if we still would have ended up with an Alabama Georgia final, no matter what. It's a journey versus destination thing here. And I think expanded playoff, the journey that would involve and the experiences that teams would have, I think that would be absolutely worth it.
Bill, we saw so many upsets this year. I mean, just kind of the unknown, right? Every week it seemed like. Was that out of COVID, or was there data and research there to indicate that that was going to happen maybe before it happened?
Yeah, I think there were two things. Number one, the top programs, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, heading into the year, all had new quarterbacks. Obviously that cost Clemson a decent amount, or just the amount of turnover they dealt with cost them a decent amount. Ohio State was a little rickety for a little while, and then they ended up losing twice. Alabama, honestly, should have lost twice. We think back to the Iron Bowl or even the LSU game. That's, you go through that again, you're more likely to lose than win out, and they are not in the playoff if they lose one of those games. So, well, probably, I guess, they wouldn't have made the playoff. But I think that was certainly part of it. I think the extra year of eligibility that everybody got, that resulted in a lot of teams having more depth than normal and being more capable of, if not a national title run, then at least an upset here, excuse me, here and there. So I think that played a role. We'll see exactly how that plays out moving forward when they try to work back, scholarship counts back to normal and everything. But I do think those two things were a big, big part of it. We were really close to having an Alabama-free college football playoff, even if they righted the ship at the very, very last second. And that would have felt like even more of a shakeup than what we ended up seeing.
Bill, Clemson is probably the answer to this question, but I'm going to pose it anyhow. The next ACC team to make a college football playoff is whom? And if it's not Clemson, then who is it?
Yeah, I'm very curious about Clemson. I mean, this is like a brand new act for Dabo Swinney here with the amount of change that they're undergoing. I'm really curious to see how they navigate it. I mean, it's interesting. It does feel like there's a vacuum, a leadership vacuum at the top of the ACC. I guess Clemson's certainly the smart answer. Their history is still their history, their recent history, that is. And so we'll see. But this, if you're Miami, you have to look at this as an opportunity for a springboard. If you're North Carolina, with the way they're recruiting, at least they got to play a heck of a lot better than they did this year. But you have to look at this as an opportunity. It feels like there's kind of maybe some new life in the ACC race. And yeah, I mean, Clemson's probably the smart answer, but I'm really, really curious to see if somebody can kind of step up and take advantage of the moment.
So who would you guess?
I mean, I think the other.
Who would you guess on that, Bill? I mean, again,
yeah, it has to be.
Who would you say, Miami?
Well, I mean, Clemson is the obvious smart answer, but outside of that, man, I don't know. I don't know who the most likely would be at this point. Maybe I'll just throw out a wild card and say NC State, since they were pretty good this year, and it seems like they're going to return quite a bit for next year.
That's the thing. You mentioned Pitt and NC State, and Bill, the first thing that popped in my mind is Pitt is bringing back their entire offensive line, of which three guys could have left. Carter Warren being, I think, the highest potential draft pick of them. Owen Drexel's done a great job filling in for Jimmy Morrissey a year ago at center. I think they've got a lot to build on there. And then NC State's point, and Mark, you mentioned this, NC State brings back, good heavens, seemingly, I want to say 8 or 9 starters on defense. A defense that was pretty good, right? I mean, every research point, I think data point you have, proved that NC State was really good on that side of the ball. Maybe one of the better teams in the country, right?
Yeah, they were 14th in my defensive SP Plus rankings this year. And like you said, they weren't supposed to take that leap just yet. And like you said about Pitt, in the last, I think, 2 years, they've been top 15 on both sides of the ball at least once here. So you can definitely see the potential. It's just, you got to wrangle it. You got to put it all together at the right time while Clemson's still vulnerable. This is kind of everything solidifies and then the leadership gets shaken up a little bit and then it solidifies again. We'll see what happens when it solidifies. Maybe it's just Clemson all over again. But it feels like those two programs are at least close to if they can put everything together, that's a top 10 team right there.
Bill, isn't it funny how Clemson's vulnerable with a 10-win season, and they've done it now 11 consecutive years? I mean, the standard by which we're judging them versus ACC teams is unlike anything we've seen since probably, the Florida State's great runs and the Miami great teams. And, Dabo will figure that thing out, but, it's kind of funny. They're so used to seeing them win 13, 14, 15, that when they win 10, kind of feels like they're at 500. And I think it's a testament to the great job Dabo's done.
Oh, certainly. Their offense was absolutely out of sync this year, out of date almost. I'm really curious to see what adjustments they make, how they get their quarterback position back on track. When you have that defense, even without probably best player for half the season, when you've got that level of defense, you can survive some three and outs. So, but change on defense this year, change on offense, odds are very good. He makes the right choices and figures everything out, but he's still got to do it. And we'll see how it goes.
All right, Bill Conley, you can read his work at ESPN.com. Great follow on social media as well. Stay warm in Missouri, I'm guessing, right? Is that the goal this week?
Yeah, that's I didn't exactly dress up here. I'm not taking this hoodie off or anything. So it's been pretty brutal.
You're dressed perfectly for this show. Right. I can tell you that right now. You don't have to dress up for this
show. You're fine. Shoot, dude. Yeah, it's not one of those big high end deals like College Football Live or any of that, Bill. No, you can come dressed like that anytime. All right,
that's right.
Take care. You bet. Bill Conley does a phenomenal job. You can read his work at ESPN.com, and as I told you, it's a great follow on social media if you're into the data and research of college football. An amazing piece of work he puts together. Stay tuned. When we come back, a look ahead to a big Tuesday night in college basketball on the ACC side. We got 4 games, 2 of them here on ACC Network. We'll preview coming up next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer. Hey, don't forget Saturday nights, 10 o'clock, following ACC basketball, we bring you Nothing But Net. Kelsey Riggs with Luke Hancock, Carlos Boozer, Joel Berry. They'll break down every game, give you great insight and analysis. Coverage you can only find in one place, right here on ACC Network and the ESPN app. One app, one tap.
I'm telling you, every time I see that picture, I'm looking for Jordan Cornette. Always looking for Jordan Cornette. Are you on delay today?
Jordan's got No. Okay. Jordan's got Notre Dame and Carolina tomorrow night on ESPN2 with a knee strop, by the way.
That's a good game.
Just thought I'd add that.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah.
Some really good games. We got a bunch of them.
Thanks to Bill Conley, by the way. Oh, yeah. Holy cow. Where do you want to start here? To me, Florida State at Wake Forest feels big, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a couple tonight that have my attention. That is one of them. We talked about home teams having to hold serve. The Deacs are coming off LL, both on the road. Now they come back home. Here's Florida State. They already had one good W on Tobacco Road, winning at NC State, the thriller over the weekend. We had Malik Osborne on the show. You'll hear that coming up here momentarily on In Case You Missed It. Florida State with an opportunity here, right? Remember, they lost their home game. That home winning streak against ACC teams came to a screeching halt right out of the gate when they lost to Syracuse. So they got to steal some on the road. Well, they're looking to do that again tonight. And for the Deacs, you know, we talked about that strength of schedule early, despite the hot start. This is a golden opportunity for Coach Forbes' team, right? Bounce back after two tough losses. Can you hold serve is going to be a big storyline in ACC men's basketball as we get cranked up in January and February.
Florida State, by the way, is plus +4 above 500 on the road in the last 4 years in the ACC. It's a pretty good number. Anybody you can see at 500 or better on the road in the ACC in the last 4 years. Let's pivot to the Wolfpack of NC State. They are 0-3 in the ACC. Last time they started 0-4 was 15-16 when they finished 5-13. Virginia Tech is 0-2 in conference play. The last time they started 0-3 was 14-15. They went 2-16. As big as FSU Wake Forest sounds, NC State at Virginia Tech feels even bigger. Now, word to the wise here, the Hokies are coming out of COVID protocol. There was potential speculation as late as yesterday that this game might be pushed one more day. Instead, they're going to go ahead and play tonight, 7 o'clock on ACC Network. Hokies are heavy favorites at home. Both teams, this feels like 40 minutes of desperation basketball, doesn't it?
The key word is desperation because I think it applies to both teams. NC State has really been in a tough funk. They just cannot find a way to win a game. They need to. Mm-hmm. And for Virginia Tech, you know what? Wake Forest rolled up to Blacksburg, beat it by 19. I have told you from day one, I am high on this Virginia Tech basketball team. I know they're 0-2 in the league. This feels like not a must win, but I really need a win. Both teams need one desperately. But I think Virginia Tech's upside is higher than NC State's, in my opinion. Could be dead wrong about that. But Virginia Tech coming off the COVID, you kind of wonder what the rust is going to look like from that perspective. And for NC State, man, you just have to find a W somewhere, somehow, because this thing has been headed south now for the last 2 or 3 weeks. And Wes, the word desperate, I think, absolutely applies to both teams in this game.
Yeah, no question. So we'll see how this unfolds tonight. It's a very, very entertaining game tonight. 7 o'clock, Virginia Tech hosting NC State at the Castle in Blacksburg. I wonder what the weather will be like there. Holy cow. You hope NC State didn't have to do a day of game arrival. But same for Virginia, I guess, too. We'll talk about the Cavaliers in a moment. Game at 9 o'clock here tonight on ACC Network, presented by GEICO. Georgia Tech visits Duke. The Yellow Jackets have won exactly one time at Cameron Indoor Stadium since Stephon Xavier Marbury took him to a snowstorm win in January of 1996. And that was March of 2004 when a team that ultimately ended up at the Final Four went in and beat the Blue Devils. March 3rd, 2004, by the way. Since then, Duke has dominated this series at home. Whoa, wait, there's Paul Hewitt in the camel hair coat, ladies and gentlemen. And that is Anthony McHenry slashing to the lane. They snapped Duke's 41 home game win streak that night. That's Will Bynum. Oh, that's Marvin Lewis, who now an associate AD at Brown. BJ Elder, by the way, right there in the picture pack, he'll be the only Jacket on the bench tonight that's had a win at Duke. How about that?
I am interested to see the Blue Devils again. The only ACC team on the men's side to be ranked this week in the AP, and I'll take it to another extreme, the only ACC team to receive a vote for the first time in 40-plus years. Let that marinate a second for all you ACC basketball fans. Wes, and you and I go way back. I'm telling you, I have never seen anything like it. Duke is the only ACC team to receive a vote in the latest AP Top 25 poll for the men. That's it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Jeff Goodman tweeted over the weekend, I think they'll be, something along the lines of, I think there'll be four ACC teams in the NCAA tournament field, but I just don't know how we're going to find four.
That's not a crazy thought. I mean, it's a terrible thought for our benefit, but I don't think that's crazy. And that's why I keep saying the interesting storyline for ACC basketball. We know who Duke is. So I'm putting them over there. Who can start stringing wins together? That's why I like a Virginia Tech game tonight. Right. So critical for both those teams. Does Florida State pick another one up on the road, which is feeling like stealing? We'll get to the Clemson-Virginia game here in a second. The Hoosiers are coming off their win on the road at Syracuse. Who can start separating in this league to form the upper half, the upper third? Because that's who's going to be making the NCAA tournament, because the non-conference resumes are not great in the league this year. And it's, you see that in the AP poll. That's why guys like Jeff Goodman go, hey, four might be the right number. I mean, give or take, Joe Lenardi, you go through bracketology. Hey, you find about four, but it's not an easy four. I mean, there's a lot of teams with a double-digit seed here early January. A lot of work to be done in this league. A lot of work.
Yeah. So Georgia Tech and Duke, 9 o'clock start tonight from Cameron right here on ACC Network. Also 9 o'clock tonight, Little John Coliseum, Virginia and Clemson. Tigers beat the Cavaliers back on December 22nd at John Paul Jones Arena. They're looking to sweep a home road regular season series against Virginia for the first time in 19 years, Pac. Been a while for the Tigers.
Well, it's been a while for the Tigers to win in Charlottesville, and they did that actually with ease, winning by 17. Virginia, like I said, has had a hard time scoring the basketball, even though it wasn't a problem the last time we saw them when they were at Syracuse and won. So, again, who can start stringing together W's? That is going to be the storyline on the men's side for hoops in January and February. It's the key. You have to do it.
Yeah. Clemson had a couple of games shelved, by the way, because of the coronavirus, including Duke, which they were supposed to play, I think, on the 29th, and then one last weekend as well. So Clemson has kind of been on their an unintended pause, if you will, right, since their victory against Virginia. Cavaliers, Pack, I thought, did a pretty good job the other night. The win at Syracuse, it'll be interesting to see if they can kind of buoy that one. And you mentioned string them together. Tonight's an excellent chance for Tony Bennett to do that. Clemson, even though they haven't been hit with the virus, at least from what we hear, as much like other schools have been, Tigers have still got to go back and capture the momentum they had back on the 22nd.
Well, when they played Virginia, the Hoos couldn't throw it in the ocean. They went 11 minutes without making a basket. Clemson basically shut them down and pulled away. It was one of those deals that got the double-digit lead. We've seen them blow those kind of games. We had Brad Brunell on the show recently to talk about it. But he said, we know we've also won a few of those, including the game in Charlottesville. Yep. So I think Clemson's playing with confidence, but they got to play. They got to win. And you've got to hold serve at home. I can't emphasize that enough on this show.
Yeah, good point there. By the way, we gave you the number yesterday. 17 conference games have been played so far. Home teams have only won 7 of them. And 8 of the 17 have been decided by 5 or less. Keep an eye on that tonight. Tight fits all around, perhaps, in the ACC. Another night of competitive basketball. On the other side, Mr. Packer, we go back to Derby City. Yesterday, Emily Inksler was with us. Today, we go get Malik Williams out of Fort Wayne, Indiana, and a double-double the other night and a road win in Atlanta. The Big Five joins us next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. It is a Tuesday. It's show number 535 for those keeping score. 844-SAY-ACCN. The next 30 minutes will be all about Malik. In case you missed it, with Malik Osborne from Florida State coming up in about 15 minutes. And right now we head to Louisville because Malik Williams joins us. And I'll tell you what, the Cards are off to a good start in the league. Malik, first of all, always a pleasure having you on the show. Happy New Year and congrats on the hot start in the league. You guys are right where you want to be.
Happy New Year's to you guys, too. And, you know, I appreciate that. And we are off to a good start. And, you know, we got to continue that.
Malik, if you had to gauge kind of how this year's gone, I mean, I know you guys went to Bomar, got a couple nice wins and a really nice place to play basketball. But you come back and you kind of dive into ACC play. I know there were some dips a little bit in the non-conference. How's this team grown? I mean, you're a veteran guy. You got a feel for this. What's this been like?
It's been a lot of up and downs. I would say a roller coaster ride for sure throughout our first 13 games. You know, this team has a lot of growth to make, and we got to continue to grow. But, you know, looking back at November, you know, I believe that we're a way different team than we were. So, you know, it's about that and continuing to get better each and every day, you know, and taking those steps forward and, you know, not having a bunch of steps back. You can take 3 steps forward, and if you're going to keep taking 2 steps back, then, you know, there's never really any growth. So, you know, we got to keep on that right path of growth. So this group is good, but, you know, we got to put it all together and for stretches, longer stretches.
Malik, speaking of getting better every day, when you decided to say, guess what, I'm coming back for some more, what did you work on in the offseason that you realized, hey, I've got to personally get better for the 21-22 season in what department or departments? What did you work on?
The biggest thing was getting healthy. I had to get healthy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for my entire summer, you know, leading up to August, once everybody returned to school, I didn't really get to practice with the team until then. So before that, it was just about getting healthy and what can I do best so that I stay healthy throughout the remainder of the season. And that was the main thing for me. But then after that, just becoming a better overall leader, becoming a better overall shooter, just being more consistent, being a very high IQ guy, and, you know, somebody who we can rely on both ends of the floor, whether it's taking care of the ball or, you know, anchoring the defense.
What makes a better leader? Where did you look to become a better leader? Did you read something? Did you listen to other teammates? Did you pick up on maybe something you saw in the NBA, maybe some buddies, maybe a coaching staff? Just curious.
That's a lot of things, and it starts with yourself. You got to be an everyday guy, and, you know, guys got to look at you, and they got to be able to believe and trust in the words that you're saying, and they got to know that your intentions are good. But, you know, watching Jared this summer, and the way that he carried himself and the way that he led our team, you know, while I was out on the sideline was really big for me just because, you know, the confidence that he had, the voice that he had, and, you know, him coming in being an everyday guy was really good for me just getting back in my real role. Like, you know, I got to be there with him so that we can lead the team together.
Malik, you've been, I mean, I'm not saying you're an old guy, but you're kind of an old guy. I mean, you've been around a while. It's one of those things that, yeah, I mean, it's okay. In this case, I think, especially when we're talking about this, and you mentioned Jared West. That's a guy who transferred in. Carlick Jones last year. That's a guy who transferred in, was a great leader for you guys. But you also played with guys like Donovan. You've been around the program as Harold arrived and things like that. I mean, you've been around a long time. You understand kind of the Louisville standard and all the intangibles. I think that gives you a really unique advantage for Coach Mack.
It does, you know, because I understand the culture that Louisville had, you know, before this new coaching staff came in. So just trying to continue to instill that within the program and, you know, keep that same heritage and, you know, keep that same culture around. And because, I mean, they were great. The Louisville before was great. You know, we're going to be great now. It's just taking time for us to, you know, really get that back. But that was huge for me. And as you said, the guys that I got to play with, you know, my first year, Quinn Snyder, you know, Honest, yeah. Ray Spalding, and, you know, guys like Dan Goodell, you know, that was really good for me just watching how they carry themselves and the way that they play. Even when you know, the bad thing what happened in our season, we all stuck with it, and, you know, we believed in ourselves. So, you know, Kristen Cunningham was also a really great leader for me. He came in my first year that Coach Mack got here, and, you know, he was great. He was a great leader, and I learned a lot from him on and off the court, so.
Malik, I know that you're only worried about Pittsburgh because they're next and they're tomorrow night. But have you spent any time looking around the rest of the league? I'm just always interested how a student athlete looks at the league versus what Wes and I do each and every day. Do you pay attention to anybody else, or is it just, hey, next game, that's all I'm worried about? And if you have looked around the league, what have you seen so far?
For me personally, I'm a guy who stays in the moment, and I'm getting ready for Pitt, so for sure I don't look too far ahead until a few days before the game of the opponent that we're about to face. So I would say I stick in that moment, but I have looked around the league. You know, I watch college basketball, but it's talented. I think not only in our league, but all over college basketball, it's the most talented that I've seen, you know, a lot of teams this year. So it's always going to be a challenge every night, but I would say that we got some powerhouses in our league for sure, but also that our league is wide open.
Yeah, no question about that. To me, that made even Sunday night's win in Atlanta feel big for you guys. I know Georgia Tech's coming off a pause. You guys have been trying to build some momentum. You had the great win against Wake Forest earlier last week at home. To go on the road and get that win for this team right now, Malik, how important did that feel?
It was huge. It feels very important. And I think that we got that chip on our shoulder now, and, you know, we understand that every night we got to bring it because, you know, this league, you know, college basketball in general, like, we got to go. So I would say that it was really good for us to go get a road win. We've been in two hostile environments on the road, and, you know, we lost two of those games. And it was big for us to get our fourth road kill of the year.
Malik, man, we didn't get the Kentucky game. What are we going to do with that? I mean, Louisville, Kentucky, we got to play that game somewhere, don't we? I mean, somebody's got to be open on a Tuesday night. Let's get together, and I don't care where
that in.
We got to play that game, Malik. I mean, you got to have some pull, man. You've been there long enough. You got to make that happen.
No doubt. And, you know, I'm ready for the challenge, and we're ready. So whenever we can make that happen, let's do it.
That had to be a bummer, though, right? I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, you're going to lose a game. Don't lose. Let's not lose that game, right? I mean, that's just one of those special deals.
Yeah, it was terrible timing. You know, all around the country, we're dealing with that, the protocols of health and safety. So, you know, we got to do what we got to do. But it was a real bummer to lose that game because, you know, none of us over here wanted to lose it. And I'm sure they still want to play it. So whatever we got to do to make it happen, let's do it.
All right, now, I know basketball's big. I know finishing up and getting your degree is big. But Roddy Jones and I and Taylor Davis are in Louisville. We're doing this football game. We got BC Louisville. And I look down on the field before the game, and I got a 6-foot, 11-inch parabolic mic operator down there. What in the world? How in the world did you get rolled up into being a part of the production crew for football this year? That's number one, it sounds like it's an interesting – you know, kind of direction for you. I know you want to kind of get into this or at least learn more about broadcasting. So is that part and parcel of what happened?
Yeah, it was really interesting as well, but it was part of my internship. I did an internship for my first semester, you know, just working towards my degree still. So my internship brought me to a lot of different places and to do a lot of different things. I worked a few volleyball games, a few soccer games, and, you know, the men's football game was one of the most interesting and fun. I didn't realize it would rain and be so cold, and I had on shorts, so that was kind of tough. And we were getting out of practice, so I was a little tired out there, but being able to hear the guys talking on the field and, you know, just the quarterback calling his cadence and everything like that, it was really cool for me just being out there, you know, kind of watch how actual college football game is played, being on the sideline with them. It was a really nice experience for me. You know, it's just working towards my internship. I'm not really interested in that. Wasn't all that for me, but, you know, I want to kind of do what you guys are doing. And learning the background to all of it is a big part of being successful.
Hey, Malik, let's get clean on this now. You had no interest in holding that stupid microphone down there in the rain. What you really wanted was Wes Durham's job up there in the booth, eating all that free food and staying warm, man. I know you wanted to be doing play by play. I know.
Right.
Right. Durham, he wanted your job.
Hey. Hey, look. Look here. Hey, you can have it. Just give me a few more years, Malik. I just need a few more, man. That's all it takes.
Yes, sir.
Hey, stay.
I might have a few more years in college. So
no,
we're
fine. Man. Listen, we want you to stay healthy, man, and keep up playing that good basketball, yeah. Man. Louisville's off to a great start. Look forward to watching.
Yes, sir. Will do, and I appreciate that.
Yep. Hey, Malik Williams, number 5 for the Louisville Cardinals tomorrow night against Pittsburgh. Hey, appreciate it. Take care, my man. See you soon.
Thank you. You guys take care, too.
All right. Averaging almost a dozen and 10 rebounds for Chris Mack this year. And it's going to be a big piece. I think they've got 2 double-figure scorers. Noah Locke is a guy who has shown up averaging 11. He mentioned Jared West. And look, I haven't seen everybody at full length, Pack. But I will offer you this. There are about 3 or 4 really, really terrific lockdown perimeter defenders. Jared West would be one of them. The job he did the other night on Michael DeVoe. Now, DeVoe still got 23, but took a lot of shots to get it. West did a really good job there. I think Leaky Black at North Carolina has proven to be a really good perimeter defender. And we all know Wendell Moore at Duke is a terrific perimeter defender. Now, there'll be more we're going to add to the list here, okay? But at the same time, I think Louisville's starting to round into form. That's a big ball game tomorrow night. Feels like the Cards have a chance to maybe take another step forward with a victory against Pittsburgh.
Again,
at
home.
We'll see what happens.
At home, you got to win.
Yep, a good point there. When we come back, in case you missed it from yesterday, Florida State's Malik Osborne. Talk about another veteran leader. This guy's at the front of Leonard Hamilton's list when it comes to that. He'll join us next on Packer.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday, 844-SAY-ACCN. We go from one Malik to another, Wes.
Yep, you bet. Malik Osborne of Florida State, a central figure in Leonard Hamilton's team this year, even before the ball went in the air in game one. But coming off a big road win at NC State, the Noles just stayed on the road. A little trip west on I-40 to Winston-Salem for the game with Wake Forest tonight at Joel Coliseum. We asked Malik yesterday when we visited with him, the win over NC State was big, but maybe a little bigger than we think, given what they've been through in the last couple of weeks.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Wanted to even out the series as far as conference play. We knew that after losing to Syracuse, that how important conference play is, especially winning games on the road. And so even though we were on break, it was a lot of time to prepare, get mentally ready, and also physically ready. And then we came out there and gave NC State our best shot and was grateful to come out with the win.
Malik, we were just talking about how important it's going to be for everybody in this conference. If you lose one at home, it feels like you got to steal one or two on the road, doesn't it? I mean, and you guys never, ever lose. And so when all of a sudden Syracuse gets you, I'm sure the mindset was, okay, you know what, that stinks. But now we got to go grab one or two from on the road. And again, you got NC State in your back pocket now, which is beautiful. You won a tight game, which was really important. Now you get this Wake Forest team, and I know they've lost 2 in a row on the road, but man, they've been really, really good, and they've really, really been tough at home. So you know what's in front of you coming tomorrow night.
Yeah, we definitely do. Especially, like you said, with Wake Forest losing two in a row in conference, it's a really good team. Have a whole bunch of veteran guys on the team as well, so we know that it's going to be a big fight. But you know, we got a young team, but we have a team that's very talented and willing to learn. So you know, we're going to give them our best shot, and they're going to give us our best shot, and we're willing to come out, willing to settle for whatever the result is at the end, as long as we give it our best.
All right, so how much leadership, and I said you lead Florida State in a lot of areas, scoring, yes, rebounding, yes, but there's also all this intangible stuff too. You kind of got to be the on-the-floor guy. I mean, you're the one that's been there for all of this. How much of that, you and Wyatt Wilkes are the old heads, if you will. How does all that come into play when you got guys banged up, you got new guys coming in? I mean, you got Cleveland, you got Fletcher, you got Mills. You're trying to integrate everybody here, Malik.
Yes. I mean, I would say the veterans have done a really good job at just being able to show the younger guys and the newer guys are pretty much are from our personal experience. We've been in the program for a long time, and we've seen a lot of great leaders come through this program and how they've handled various situations just like this one with Trent Forrest, Devin Vassell, Terrence Mann, Phil Colfer, MJ Walker. I mean, the list goes on and on. But we were grateful enough to see these guys, these leaders in action. And so basically we're taking those same concepts, those same procedures, the same strategies they had, and applying it to the young guys. And it's working well. You know, at the beginning, you know, it's rough because we're asking them to do some things that they've never done before. But by leading them by example on the court and also just talking with them and answering questions and providing providing guidance off the court, we know that the team is starting to gel as the season progresses on.
Malik, last year was nuts with COVID, right? Everybody was pausing, delaying, postponements, cancellations. Mentally, you had to still be dialed in. Physically, it was tough. You're trying to stay safe. Now, all of a sudden, it kind of looks like we go through the most of 21. Life is good. And all of a sudden, bam, you guys don't play another game for 17 days. I'm sure there's flashbacks of, oh, man, here we go again. As a guy with experience, how difficult was this last run of 17 days without playing a game? And now moving forward, what you went through last year, that experience in helping the rest of a young team kind of figure their way and navigate through this COVID?
I mean, just being able to go through the COVID year last year provided us with a lot of experience, but also just a lot of different ways to handle certain pauses. Because I think last year we had two pauses, I believe. And so throughout those pauses, we were able to get creative and figure out how do we still keep our chemistry up? How do we still keep the guys engaged? How do we keep our minds fresh? How do we keep our bodies fresh? And so going through this pause again, we just took those same things and applied it to this team. We understood that, you know, it's very unfortunate to go through a pause, especially missing out on three games that the guy, we know that everybody wanted to play and everybody wanted to see, but being able to still keep the young guys engaged, the young guys involved and attentive to basketball, that was a big thing about it. We didn't want our chemistry to fall because we know that that's the key part of us. That's what makes Florida State Florida State and what creates our culture. So the guys being able to take certain things such as hanging out with guys, playing the game with guys, watching film with certain guys, and just keeping everybody involved and engaged. That's what I would say was the biggest part of coming out the break and keeping everybody focused on the rest of the season as well.
Hey, Malik, in a weird way, can you compare this to last year, to 2 years ago, to any of your other previous seasons in Tallahassee because of the roster turnover and all the things that have happened?
I would say this is probably its own unique year, especially having the amount of new guys that we do have. Not only do we have a lot of young freshmen, but we also have a lot of young transfers as well. You have Cameron Fletcher, sophomore, and then you have Caleb Mills, also sophomore. This is a unique situation, but you know the culture that we have, it applies to everything. It applies to an older team, it applies to a younger team. It's just really all about the players and how we stay connected. So this is, like I said, a unique situation, but everything that we've done in the past, it still applies and it's still working. So, I mean, as the old saying goes, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. So that's just pretty much how we're going with this year.
Malik, your head coach is one of our favorite people on this show. And he was giving us a hard time because we have this thing that if you make 10 appearances on the show, you get a free mug. And he was giving me a hard time last week. Where's my mug? Because he hadn't received it yet. You've now heard enough from Leonard during your career. Give me one thing that you've seen coach do that the young guys haven't obviously seen yet that you just smile and go, yeah, I remember when I was a freshman, or yeah, I remember when he pulled that stunt on me back in my sophomore year. I'm sure there has to be something that Leonard has, like one of his automatics to keep these guys on their toes.
I mean, he has quite a few. He has a couple sayings. I would say one thing he does that I remember when I was younger was that he would kind of like he would act like he didn't remember your name until, you know, he was like, man, so-and-so, can you grab me some boards? I haven't seen you jump. And then whoever it is goes and gets about 8 or 9 rebounds. He's like, oh, I remember your name. And then they feel all good about themselves. So, I mean, he's done that with a lot of guys this season. But it's one of those things where it's like, it's funny when you hear it, but you know the purpose behind it because you've been there before. You're like, I remember when he acted like he didn't know my name and he kept calling me knucklehead. And then you thought about, does he really know my name? And then next you know, you have a good game. And then he knows your first, middle, and your last name at practice. So then, I mean, it's one of those funny things that, you know, you enjoy it when you get older.
Good player, big game tonight.
The veteran guys, yeah, no question. Wake Forest ball game tonight, 7:00 at the Joel Coliseum. Those veteran guys with Hamilton are fabulous, aren't they? I mean, are they not phenomenal? Just the way it all kind of, you sit there and you work with a guy a couple of years, and the older they get, the more they understand kind of the idiosyncrasies, for lack of a better term, but also the reason for the success. It's pretty unique.
It's also one of the reasons, I think, for Florida State's slow start, because they are not an old team, Wes, unlike some past years. Right. And as Leonard told us a couple of weeks ago, this is a team that's still learning its way, and the young guys are starting to figure it out. Hey, that win at NC State the other night, I think it was a really important win for them. For Wake Forest, big game tonight, though, right? Back-to-back losses on the road. There's no shame in losing games at Miami and Louisville. Those are two good clubs who are undefeated in conference play. But for Coach Forbes tonight, back home, need to win. And for Florida State, already gave one away at home, looking to steal another one on the road. Intriguing game.
Yep. Well, you're right about that. When we come back, the Power Hour on this Tuesday, Courtney Banghart at 9:30. But when we come back, we're going to play Name That Team. What could possibly go wrong? Packer and Durham continues on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham.